First up, no work, no pay. They haven't earned it. Stop the payments. There is no one to speak for us. And they're now taking £56 per child out of the Northern Ireland school budget. Our children deserve better. They're just some of the comments added to an online petition this morning. It's calling to for a stop to MLA pay. And nearly 20,000 people have now signed this. Talks to see if Stormont were meant to start again next week. But it doesn't look like that is going to happen. Let's get the latest from our political editor, Mark Devonport. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Vinny.
Both the DUP and Sinn Féin say they want an executive up and running, but many are quite sceptical about that.
Yes, I mean, they're both saying that they're committed to devolution, but it's obviously devolution on their terms. And what has become very clear in the last couple of days is that there is no sign of any compromise to bridge the deadlock over Sinn Féin saying that they want an Irish Language Act, a standalone Irish Language Act, and previously Arlene Foster, the DUP leader, having said that such a thing would not happen on her watch. Now, during previous talks, we know that the DUP did put up ideas about a kind of wider bit of cultural legislation, but that was rejected by Sinn Féin. Just yesterday, Gerry Adams said there'll be no new assembly if there's no Irish Language Act. And today, we're expecting to hear from Arlene Foster, a speech which will emphasise her commitment to devolution, but will again say that Sinn Féin is talking about keeping the DUP to agreements which it never made in the first place.
Of course, you've mentioned there, in terms of Arlene and her speech later on. What else do we know? Any other bits of information that have come out already about what else she will say?
Yeah, well, the DUP released some extracts in advance from the speech, which is going to be to her party's executive in a hotel on the outskirts of South Belfast this evening. She will be saying that it's wrong for people to put two and two together and to make the argument that just because the DUP now has its deal with the Conservatives, that it's not interested in a return to Stormont. She will say that the DUP continues to believe that having an executive and an assembly up and running is in the long-term interests of Northern Ireland,
yeah,
and that she wants to see that immediately restored to make what she says will be a number of crucial and pressing decisions in relation to things like health and education. But she will be, as I say, saying that Sinn Féin has raised a barrier to this, which is obviously a reference to their demands around an Irish Language Act, and essentially blaming Sinn Féin for the deadlock, which obviously you wouldn't be surprised about.
The contrast, of course, to what Arlene is saying in terms of her hopes or optimism about what might happen in the next few days, weeks, months. Some of her own MPs, Ian Paisley, for example, tweeting, fact, devolution as we know it is dead. The fact is Sinn Féin leadership no longer has the skill or craft to cut a deal. They think politics is about them making demands and getting them. The mood music isn't good.
The mood music certainly isn't good. I mean, if you talk to the DUP, they'll say, oh, well, Arlene isn't contradicting, for instance, what Sammy Wilson said recently, but there does seem to be a difference of emphasis. I mean, he was saying that direct rule is not his preference, Sammy Wilson, but that he regarded the current talks as a sham and was very critical of James Brokenshire. I suppose, how do you square these different positions? Well, Arlene Foster is saying devolution is her preference, but that I imagine, yeah, she will, in the course of the speech, say that if Sinn Féin sticks to their current line, then something must be done about it. You did mention at the top there the salaries.
Yes.
Sometimes you do get to hear now from some government officials that they are beginning to wonder about what would happen, what should happen to the salaries if this goes on and on through the course of the autumn and nothing happens. But the difficulty there is, of course, the Conservatives have got this Westminster deal with the DUP. And last time I saw Conservative MPs, particularly the former Secretary of State, raising the whole business about cutting salaries on the floor of the House of Commons, the DUP was quite angry about that, saying, look, our MLAs are not responsible for this deadlock. So that's something that James Brokenshire will have to ponder on.
I'm going to ask you a question, Mark, and you probably can't answer it because I don't think anyone outside of the politicians can do so. In terms of that magic word deadline and when we might actually have some kind of resolution or change in the current status, have you any idea what might happen in the next few weeks?
Well, certainly we miss so many deadlines, but the sort of importance of deadlines has now become devalued. So I'm not expecting James Brokenshire to set another deadline. But what we have to look at realistically is, when is Westminster up and running and when are there windows for MPs to legislate? Because we're now in a situation where whatever happens, whether there's a deal or whether there's a complete breakdown, whether there's a return to direct rule, James Brokenshire will have to push some legislation through Westminster. Now, Westminster comes back, I think, next week and has a short period of time before it breaks for party conferences in the middle of September. I think that particular window has already been missed. There's no way that whatever happens between the parties that they'll be able to get any legislation through there. So then the next possible window is in October when James Brokenshire comes back. We could have a deal that could get something through at some point in the point of during October. There again, we could have direct rule during October, or because James Brokenshire is so reluctant about direct rule, it may well be that we'll get more of this kind of creeping government from Westminster and a measure that pushes through a budget. And in relation to that, I think there's some disquiet on the DUP side because, of course, they did negotiate that deal with the Conservatives and they haven't yet seen any of that money spent. So I think they'll be pressing for any new budget that maybe the Secretary of State pushes through to include some of the DUP cash or DUP deal cash, which has so far been withheld.
Some people might describe it, Mark, as almost direct rule by stealth if this will creep in over the next few months.
It is looking increasingly like we're on that kind of road. I mean, for instance, we have already had a bit of legislation which has been passed through Westminster enabling rates to be collected in Northern Ireland. And that, strictly speaking, should really have been part of Stormont's business. I think we'll very likely get a budget during the course of the autumn, which again should be Stormont's business. Why are we not getting full-blown direct rule? I think it's because James Brokenshire is very worried that if he goes for full-blown direct rule with ministers, that it will be hard to put things back together again, and that particularly Sinn Féin might walk away and not come back to Stormont for a long period of time. So he is reluctant to be seen to be enthusiastic about taking that step, but it may be that he might be left with no other option by certainly the end of the year.
Going back to next week when we were expecting talks to start, is it going to happen, Mark, or are we going to see any kind of movement there?
I don't think we can completely rule out talks next week yet. There are some gaps, but I know that the Secretary of State has got some parliamentary business that he's got to do. He's got to be there for Parliament returning. And at the moment, you would have thought that people like the officials at Stormont Castle or all the parties would have been let known at least about the logistics of where and when some talks might happen. And so far as I'm aware, none of that has happened so far. So it looks more like kind of telephone diplomacy or bilateral meetings between the Northern Ireland office and some of the parties next week, and not proper talks until maybe later in September.
And of course, Mark, just finally, we've heard lots in the news in the last month or so and beyond about budget constraints and problems when it comes to schools and health, etc. This £1 billion deal that the DUP made with the Tories, that is dependent on either a direct rule or the Assembly. We can't, am I right, get it if we're in the middle where we are at the moment?
Well, it isn't tied to the restoration of the executive. The DUP were adamant about that they weren't going to kind of do a deal which sees them propping up the Conservatives and then have it all blocked because the executive doesn't come back. So they say that it can be spent prior to that, but they do want ministers in position, whether they are direct rule ministers or devolved ministers, in order to spend it. I suppose it is possible that if James Brokenshire does pass a budget in the autumn, that he could factor some of that money in. So far, he hasn't done it. And there's been quite a lot of disquiet on the DUP ranks. One senior DUP source said to me that the Northern Ireland office were playing what he termed an absolutely disgraceful game with the DUP deal cash, because he said it wasn't tied to the Stormont talk. So I think that the DUP will be pressing for some of that money to be used, because it was meant to be in this financial year, and obviously if it doesn't get given out until the end of the year, it's harder for it to be used, although I am told there is a bit of flexibility for it to be pulled forward then into the next financial year if we don't have things like contracts being given out. Some of that money was meant, for instance, to improve infrastructure, improve broadband. If you're going to use that, you have to put up adverts, get tenders out for contractors,
All of that's quite a long-term process, so you need to get the ball rolling as soon as possible.
Okay, possibly a bumpy road ahead, Mark Davenport. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Alan McQuillan is the former PSNI Assistant Chief Constable, and you sat on the independent review panel who set MLA pay. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
This is something we have talked about before, and it seems to get more relevant as time goes on. You heard Mark and what he said there in terms of a deadline or lack thereof one, and people will start to ask, you know, how long can this drift on while they're getting quite substantial salaries?
Yeah, and I think it has actually gone beyond the salary issue. I mean, we have seen the stories drifting out about issues about new diagnostic tests for things like bowel cancer, where it's critical that that's detected as early as possible. There's a new, better test. We can't deploy it because there's nobody there to approve it. We have new drug treatments for people who are critically and seriously ill, and we can't get approval for them because there's no minister in place. And the Secretary of State has specific responsibilities here under the Human Rights Act to protect the lives of citizens. And frankly, he's failing. It really has reached the point when we need direct rule. We need some form of government. I would prefer to see Stormont up and running and local ministers doing that, but if they're not going to do it, we need to have government.
So are you saying then, Alan, that pay should be stopped now? Are you putting a date on it? What should be done in terms of the money?
I think, first of all, the fundamental issue is that we have to have some form of direct rule that can take these critical decisions for the safety of people and the safety of budgets and the effectiveness of the service of Northern Ireland. That has to come first. Then the Secretary of State needs to take a decision on the money. I think if there's two options there. Number one, just stop it until they come back. Or number two, if some of them are prepared to go back, let the ones who are prepared to go back.
But being realistic, Alan, could that actually work if some of them were going back? Surely then that just could lead to more problems if, for example, you have more from one party than another.
Well, yes, absolutely. And the assembly can function without all the MLAs there, but the executive can't because of the legislation. And I'm not suggesting we go back to an unbalanced executive.
Yeah,
but there could be some sort of role for an assembly where people were able to come along who've been elected and discharge their responsibilities. But that's up to the politicians to sort out. The issue is the people need government. We don't have government.
Here's a question for you listening this morning. Are you happy for your MLAs to continue to be paid, or would you like to see some kind of deadline put on them and their salaries? Or do you think that they're real people like you and me? They have bills, they have mortgages, they have families, and they are doing some work to earn that money. Alan, you can keep me right when it comes to these figures. This is from the detail, I think, in July. The current costing for the taxpayer, just over $12,000 per day to employ our MLAs, and our MLAs are on just shy of £50,000 a year, so $49,500 as of, I think, March this year. They got a £500 bump.
That's right, and then you have other things in that, for example, their pension contributions and that added in. So, yes, that's about the total cost. It's about £12,000 to £14,000 a day.
There is, to be fair, to many, if not all, the MLAs, Alan, there will be people doing work. There will be stuff that, you know, constituency work that they are carrying out. They're not just sitting on their backsides, you know, cashing their checks. Well, I know the perception can be because of the stalemate and the issue with talks, but if you live in a certain area and you need to contact your MLA for help about something, then in theory they are still there. They're still doing that work.
In theory, and I know a lot of them will be, and I know a lot of them personally, they'll be working their guts out for their constituents. There'll be others who are just sitting there, and it was noticeable across the summer with my various problems that many MLAs were invisible.
So then how can you say, well, look, maybe we need to look at their pay and potentially stopping it completely?
Well, I think that the question is, can that be done other ways? I mean, their main locus is not to represent their constituents in terms of disability claims, for example. It's supposed to be their role in governing Northern Ireland and running the executive and running the Stormont Parliament. If that's not functioning, their main role has gone.
Okay, Alan, stay there for a moment for me, please. I'm going to talk to the former MLA, Nelson McCausland. Good morning, Nelson.
Good morning.
and also the commentator and journalist Jude Collins. Good morning, Jude.
Good morning, Vinny.
Nelson, we've had this conversation before, but you know we're going to talk and hear from a nurse later on who is so stressed in her job she is going to leave because of the conditions, and a lot of that harks back to staffing and money. So when people hear about MLAs that they perceive to be doing very little because of the stalemate, earning nearly 50 grand a year, they get very frustrated. What do you think we should be doing?
The first thing is that there has to be a very clear recognition that of the main political parties, of the five main political parties, four of them are quite clear that they will go back into an assembly now. They're not trying to hold Northern Ireland to ransom. They're not trying to blackmail people or anything. Four parties would go back into an assembly now and into an executive. There is one single political party that is holding Northern Ireland to ransom, and that is Sinn Féin. It's very difficult to avoid having to say this, that unfortunately a lot of the public discourse...
They would say, of course, Nelson... I'll let you back in, but of course they would say that they're not holding the country to ransom. They are sticking by their constituents, the people that voted for them, in terms of the promises they made around the election time.
People are elected to represent their constituents, that is correct. But they are elected to represent them in the Assembly. You do your negotiations, your legislation, all of these things in the context of an Assembly. If you prevent an Assembly being restored, you are holding Northern Ireland to ransom. I just want to make this point on it. So it's very easy for people to say it's politicians' fault, or if there's a problem in education, it's teachers. And it becomes a sort of blanket thing. The difficulty here is that one party is holding Northern Ireland to ransom. They're not in the business of being negotiators. That's clear from the reports of the talks. And they're not in the business of being negotiators. I think Gerry Allen's basically is in the business of being a dictator. It's a my way or no way. And that's not the way that you do negotiation. So my suggestion would be that, and it's one that indeed Alan McClellan hinted at there, or indeed referred to, which is that if parties are prepared to go back into the Assembly and do some work, and you don't need an executive to do that, then indeed there could be the possibility of a situation where if you are prepared to go back, yes, you receive your pay. If you belong to that party and you follow the diktats of that party that you will not go back, then indeed the salary and so on should be cut. It is bizarre, I think, that yesterday we had Gerry Adams lining up with some others demanding an Irish Language Act. And Adams in particular saying, that's the red line. Unless I get an Irish Language Act, Sinn Féin aren't going
okay,
back.
Well, what you're kind of saying now, do correct me if I'm wrong, Nelson, is that basically the Sinn Féin MLAs, they should have their salary cut. The rest, if they're willing to go back in, let's talk about the other, say, four main parties. If they're willing to go back in, then fair enough, you keep your pay, things continue in some kind of normality. But if you are a shinner, that's it, no pay, because you won't go in.
Well, if you're not prepared to turn up for work, you're not prepared to do the work, that I think is not a view that's unreasonable. And I've heard a lot of people saying that. Now, having said that, we can't go on forever in the current scenario. We can't go on forever without a proper, without an assembly, without people being able to make decisions. And Mark Davenport's already talked about some of the practicalities around that. But I think one of the things about removing the salary from the one party, that is the blockage, that would actually send out into the public domain a very clear message. Those are the people responsible. That is the party responsible. That is the party leader that is setting out this demand. And I do say it was bizarre yesterday to see or to hear Gerry Adams saying that their red line was an Irish Language Act on the very same day or the day after the news emerging that in the Irish Republic, the Bank of Ireland has now stopped putting Irish language options on its ATM machines because only 1% of people use them.
Okay, but obviously this
it goes
back to and if Sinn Féin were on the program this morning, they would say this. But we have asked them for a representative so far. We're still waiting. They would say, look, they're standing up for what they believe and what they have told their constituents and the people that vote for them that they believe in. For example, the Irish Language Act, equality, a Bill of Rights, legacy issues. So they're not just, as you describe it, holding them to ransom. They are standing up for what they believe in, and they're trying to secure that for the people that voted for them, enforcing what they were standing for.
And you do that on the floor of the Assembly as a functioning Assembly. That's the democratic process. That's the way it works. What we have got is not the democratic process. We've got a process whereby there is a bullying by Sinn Féin.
Well, they would say they're not bullying as well.
They would say that, wouldn't they? Because they're trying to excuse the inexcusable.
Okay.
They're trying to defend the untenable. They're trying to defend the undemocratic. The truth is...
Well, we had John O'Dowd on this programme yesterday, Nelson, and what he said was, what kind of party would we be, I'm paraphrasing here slightly, if we went back on promises we made only a few months ago to our electorate?
Well, they made those promises quite clearly for electoral purposes. That was to create a coalition of interest that would garner a vote for them and so on. Now, that is... It would also, of course, the issue in the Irish Language Act is part of a longer cultural strategy that Sinn Féin have had dating back to the 1980s, and they see this as the high point of that. So they have their reasons for doing that. That doesn't mean that the ordinary, decent people of Northern Ireland, right across the country, should be held to ransom.
Okay, let me bring in
the political aspirations.
Let me bring in Jude Collins. Jude Collins, at this point. Jude, good morning. Go ahead. What do you think?
Good morning, Vinny. Well, I have to admire Nelson's energy at directing this fire at Sinn Féin and particularly Gerry Adams. But let's look at the thing more broadly. I think it's understandable that people would say, let's cut their pay. That'll bring them to their senses, these politicians. And yes, there are people who are working for much less and are furious that the funding for the work they do, like nurses and so on, isn't available because they say the executive isn't in place and the Assembly hasn't gathered. But if you cut people's politicians' pay, there's going to be a political price for that financial saving. I think there's a need, above all, to, if you believe in devolved government, to keep structures in place so that it makes it as easy as possible for people to move into doing the work that they were doing before.
But, Jude, to be fair, you mentioned the structures. We've heard already on the programme this morning issues around health, and it's been outlined the barriers that are now in the way because we don't have a functioning Assembly executive. And therefore, the things that we can't get across the line here because of the situation, this stalemate that we're in at the moment.
Well, I don't really believe that the British government wouldn't be capable of finding ways of releasing money, because it's money that we're all told is coming from them in the first place, that they wouldn't find ways of releasing the money if they were so minded. I think they're using that as a pressure to try to get the executive back in place.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Gerry Adams is saying that basically they won't go back in unless there is an Irish Language Act, but surely there can't be an Irish Language Act if there is no executive.
Well, there could be the commitment to an Irish Language Act. You see, the basis, if you remember when Martin McGuinness called time on the executive, his point was that there was a lack of good faith, that there was a series of things, Bill of Rights, Irish Language Act, as you say yourself, legacy issues, and generally a lack of just ordinary courtesy and respect. And above all, I really do think this is central. How can you have a functioning executive if you have a party that's going to make promises or be part of promises or agreements and then simply not live up to them?
Are you trying to tell me that the parties in the past haven't made promises and election pledges, and I'm not necessarily associating this to Sinn Féin, and changed their mind for whatever reason down the line, perhaps because they've reevaluated where we are and they decide that they believe that is what is best for Northern Ireland? So you're telling me politicians, political parties don't change their mind ever?
Oh, yes, they do. But, I mean, there's one thing to change your mind. It's another thing to sign up to an international agreement and then say, well, that really isn't my responsibility or it's somebody else's fault or, well, let's forget about that. Now, we all know an Irish Language Act was promised. So there's, if you like, it seems to me that Gerry Adams is making that as a sort of signal that the DUP can make. He's not going after, as far as I can tell, a clear commitment to a Bill of Rights. He's not making a commitment to dealing with the legacy issues is absolute.
Okay. Nelson, you'll want to respond to that.
I think he's saying the Irish Language Act, let's see if the Irish Language Act promised an agreement involving all parties. If the DUP is going to say, no, we don't care about all that stuff that was in the Good Friday Agreement, we didn't sign up to it, well, clearly you're not going to have people you can work with in the executive.
Nelson?
Well, first of all parties did not sign up to it. It's very clear. If I could do a little advert for Fact Check NI, which is an independent website that checks facts, and they've been very clear in their report on it that the DUP did not ever sign up to an Irish Language Act and have been very vociferous in their opposition to it because they believe in cultural equality, not the cultural supremacy that Gerry Adams wants. That's the difficulty. That in these talks, we're moving on to that issue, I see, but the reality is that Sinn Féin, it's their way, it's every demand about culture. And culture is an issue which in Northern Ireland has been problematic for many years. It's back to the preferential treatment given to the demands of Sinn Féin at the time of the Belfast Agreement. We're living with the outworkings of that now, and they want to entrench that further.
Okay, well, Sinn Féin would know.
Traditions should be treated equally and fairly.
All right, I want to go to the phones in a moment. Sinn Féin would probably say that they are not looking for cultural supremacy, although,
it
once again,
better if they turn up themselves.
Well, that's a fair point, Nelson. We did ask them on, and we're still waiting to hear. Sammy in Belfast. Go ahead, Sammy.
Oh, it's about these MLAs and their wages. Now, every time, as it's mentioned, if somebody always comes back and says, oh, but they're doing their constituency work, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's okay. You see the part of their wages that deals with their constituency work? Pay them that.
You think they should have a partial payment then, Sammy?
Well, you see the part that deals with going up to Stormont. Why should they get paid for that? Because they're not doing it. At the moment, they're turning up for work and they'll say, I'll do 50% of my work, but I still want 100% of the wages. Now, if any working man goes into work and says something like that, what do you think would happen? They'd get their P45, wouldn't they?
Is it the same, though? Can you really compare like for like, Sammy, given the job that they have?
Well, what do you mean? I mean, the job that they have is...
Well, for example, you know, let's talk about for my job. It's you could say it's a 9-to-5 or whatever. And if I don't turn up, does it really matter? Whereas they're doing work. If you need help, and they are your MLA in your area, and you need help with something, then they're there to call.
Yes, that's okay. We'll pay them for that part of the job, then. Don't pay them for the part that involves sitting in Stormont. That's ridiculous. At the minute, they're doing 50% of what they're supposed to do, but they're getting 100% of their wages. I mean, in any language, that's not fair. If I turned up to my work and say, I'll do that and I'll do that, but I'm not going to do that, I'd be out the door.
Okay.
But these people seem to get their full wages that I'm paying for as a taxpayer.
Well, what do you say to them, Sammy? If the politicians are listening this morning, what do you say? What's your message?
Not what I say, because they're not going to do anything.
But obviously it's important because they are elected representatives. These are not people that have just wandered into the job. People have elected them in their areas. So what do you say to your MLA, you don't need to tell me who it is, in terms of how you feel?
I vote unionist. I would say, well, like unionist party, to be fair, is willing to get around the table. But Sinn Féin says, well, we're not going to get around the table until we get the Irish Language Act. So, like, in my opinion, it's them that's holding everything up.
Okay.